Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast.
Memory for you that you can share with the people that you love. Hear the Appleseed every Thursday at noon, right here on the information and cultural beacon of the Four Corners, KSJE, Farmington, New Mexico.
Tune in for Philosophy Talk, the program that questions everything.
Except your intelligence.
Coming up, mind sharing.
Sounds like science fiction if you ask me.
We do mind reading all the time. Why not also mind sharing?
Because it doesn't make sense. Do you think I'm telepathic?
No, you can use gestures, facial expressions, body language.
Why not just use your words?
Mind sharing. Next time on Philosophy Talk.
Listen to Philosophy Talk every Tuesday at noon on KSJE 90.9 FM, Farmington. Minutes past 8 o'clock. It is Monday morning, the first day of April. So it's April Fool's Day. So do be careful out there, everybody. If you're on social media, watch everything you read with an open eye, I'll just say. Good morning, everyone. I'm Scott Micklin. Thanks for tuning in to KSJE 90.9 FM over the air, of course, here in San Juan County, New Mexico, in Durango, Colorado. We broadcast at 103.3 FM. And if you want to listen to us and you're somewhere else on the planet, well, just go to our website. You can always listen there at ksje.com. I also want to welcome our viewers who are joining us this morning. The video of this program is streaming out live to the KSJE Facebook page and also to our YouTube channel. So welcome aboard to everybody. So glad that you are with us, because coming up in the next few moments, I am talking with State Senator Steve DeVille. He is my guest. He has decided not to run for re-election this fall, and that means we can talk about his 20-year career at the state legislature, but his experience in politics goes much beyond that, as we will learn in the next few moments right here on KSJE, talk about some of his landmark pieces of legislation that he was a part of and more. That conversation begins in the next few moments right here on KSJE, so stay tuned for that, everybody. Then, of course, we'll take some time and talk with none other than Lewis Campbell. It is our Monday reboot segment that's coming up later on today at about 8:50 a.m. right here on KSJE, so stay tuned for that. And then don't forget about Mikes. He's going to be here. He'll take us roving with the arts, our weekday classical music program. That also comes your way at 9:06 right here on KSJE. I'll be back with my guests with more right after this. This is KSJE Farmington. KSJE is supported by San Juan Regional Medical Center, whose vision is to deliver world-class care, making life better for the communities they are privileged to serve. Offering a comprehensive range of inpatient, outpatient, and emergency care services so residents can live life better here. San Juan Regional Medical Center, community-owned and operated, here for you. KSJE is proud to support the Farmington Jazz Festival, Saturday, April 13th in downtown Farmington, featuring the Julia Keefe Trio, Delbert Anderson Quartet, Indigene Femme, and more at 3 p.m. in Orchard Park Plaza. Headliners will also appear at a workshop from noon to 2 p.m. at the Inspired Moments Event Center. The event will also honor Native musician and band leader Jacob C. Morgan with a special ceremony at 2:45 p.m. The Farmington Jazz Festival, Saturday, April 13th. Back in Studio A with my guest this morning, as I mentioned, State Senator Steve Neville is here. Mr. Neville, welcome back to KSJE. Nice to see you.
Well, thank you. I guess I get to be your April Fool today.
Is that right? Well, I wasn't going to say that, but you did. But that's okay. But there's no fooling that you are here in the studio with me. And you've got 20 years in the state legislature.
That's
another
right.
No fooling statement,
not quite.
Right?
I got another, 8 months to go.
Pardon me. Okay. Well, you know how the media is.
That's right.
That's true. But a long and distinguished career. And as I mentioned, even before you got to Santa Fe, you were involved in local politics as well. You were reminding me that you were on the county commission for a time.
Right.
And also served in other positions, right?
Well, other than a number of boards and things, that Gary Carruthers was one of my college profs. He put me on some stuff. And I grew up next to Bruce King, so he put me on some stuff. So all of that happened prior to getting elected anything. I was appointed briefly to the Aztec City Commission, 94, 5, somewhere back in there.
Okay.
And that was a partial term. A guy left town, and I filled his slot. And then decided there was a county commission seat coming open. I ran for that seat, got elected, and served two terms there before running for the state senate.
There you go. And that was almost 20 years ago.
The county commission would have been closer to 30 years ago, 28 years ago.
Right.
Yeah, the
state
the
level.
State level was 20 years ago, 19 and a half.
Okay.
Something like that.
Right.
Yep.
2004.
Right.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And so what was it, I guess, about politics, about the process, I guess, that got you thinking about running for higher office from those local examples that you mentioned? What was it about that?
I guess it was something that was genetic. Back when I was 10 or 12 years old, I ran for president of the 4-H club. You know, it's
okay.
And then in college, I ran for all kinds of student positions and stuff and did that, student senate. My college, I was in the College of Agriculture, I was president of that. So did a lot of things in college, then real involved in civic groups for a lot of years and was involved in a lot of community stuff, as we talked a little bit before. But then the city council thing popped up, and from then on, it was elected stuff statewide.
Okay. Very good. And so you had some pretty, I guess, good experiences at all those levels, I guess,
part,
right?
Everything was good. And got to, I felt like I was accomplishing things, whether other people thought that or not, that I'll leave that to their judgment. But I felt like I was getting some things done.
Right. Let's talk about some of those accomplishments then.
Okay.
And some of the things that you had a hand in, I know, mm-hmm. and still do, again, because, again, you are still in office. You are still serving on many of the
that's
committees
right.
That you've been a part of, one of mm-hmm. being the Legislative Finance Committee. And that's a really
right.
big one, I would say.
That's
deals with budgeting and revenue right. and all that stuff, right?
I've been on LFC, I don't know, 14 years, something like that. So.
Okay.
The LFC writes a draft budget that is the base for whatever the state does during the session that'll happen next January. I won't be there. I won't
right.
run.
Not someone else's.
Didn't run, but in the meantime, in December, we will adopt a preliminary budget that actually could go forth as is for the most part. It's pretty thorough and complete. The governor may not like it.
Right.
That's always the issue. When we throw our budget into the mix, then the governor says, well, let's do it this way. And she has her own budget, so we sit down for the next year, it'll be 60 days. The legislature sits down with the governor and everybody, and for 60 days, we haggle over what the details of that budget will be.
Right. So what happened this year was, this is the budget mm-hmm. that you all haggled over in December of
right.
2023.
Right.
And then it was presented to the governor. She presented her
right.
budget, and you had 30 days to kind of wrangle it out, I guess.
That's exactly it. So,
how do you feel about this year's budget, I guess?
Well,
it goes into effect July 1.
It didn't. It'll go into effect. It's big. It's the biggest budget we've ever had, $10.1 or $2 billion. It wasn't that many. I mean, like 3 years ago, we were talking $6 billion. So it's a huge change. And a billion is a lot of money.
Right.
You know, everybody thinks billions, millions are kind of the same thing. They're not. They're by far different things. We were budgeting back in the King administration hundreds of millions of dollars. Now, $1,000 million is a billion, as you know. But
right.
So we have far surpassed what Governor King's budgets were looking like. And we look like for the next few years, we're going to continue on that track. We're going to have, we don't know what the oil prices are going to do. That can always change things. But the volume of production has dramatically changed in New Mexico. And that's what makes up the difference. We have huge dollars coming in just from the production of oil. And of course, the drilling and the activity to develop those wells.
Right.
Those wells, the current oil wells don't last very long in terms of, they put out huge amounts of oil. They're hydraulic fracturing and horizontal drilling, they put out huge volumes of oil, but they only do it for a relatively short period of time. So then they have to drill another one to offset that. But that generates a lot of oil, and no matter what the price is, the state gets a big chunk of cash out of that whenever those are sold.
And it seems like the industry has done a good job of becooming more efficient, I guess. So
that's
even
true.
If the price were to drop, the activity has not. And that's maybe why the dollars are still coming in. And even though we have record budgets, the the revenue that's coming in is even more than that 10 point whatever billion that you're talking about. So there's a lot of extra money, too,
extra
that you're having
money.
To allocate.
We count that as one-time money. It's, it's money that we use for capital projects. New Mexico has a capital budget every year, and we pass that, and San Juan County always gets a piece of that. We have projects that we fund. If you drive around town, or if you cross the bridge at the one by the racetrack on the goes into the Hammond project, that's a capital project. If you look at the dam that's right next to Piedra Vista, I like to point a couple of things like that out, because those are things that people can see.
That's like a flood control dam, right?
Structure. That's several years back, but it's still something that was paid for with capital dollars that were approved by the state legislators at the time.
Got you. And it's been my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think I am, that it seems like there's the contingent of legislators from this area kind of work together to identify priority projects, and that doesn't always happen in other parts of the state. That's somewhat unique.
You may have read, there's an article about Diane Dinesh called the governor and had something line item vetoed because she didn't like some activity on a park that was close to her home. I don't know the details of that. I'll let the politicians and the and you guys hash that out
on
the news. But those kind of projects are what they have in Albuquerque. They put a little playground equipment here. They give some of it to UNM to do something to improve a building or whatever. Nothing wrong with those projects, but it's hard for a district in Albuquerque that's 20 blocks square or whatever they are. It's hard for them to come up with a project to spend the money on. So the money goes in a lot of strange places. San Juan County, we've got a lot of needs. We have water systems all over the county that they've got leaking pipes, and we have sewer systems, our sewer septic systems that need to be replaced and eliminated and replaced. We've done some of that at Kirtland. We've got irrigation districts, Bloomfield Irrigation District. We put some big money there. They actually had a failure, a siphon.
On the ditch coming in, right?
The ditch coming
in. The main source of their water.
That's the main source of City of Bloomfield's water is that ditch. So funding projects like that, we don't seem to have much shortage of needs in San Juan County to put the dollars into. So what we do is Senator Scherer and former Representative Lane and Montoya and Duncan, we all sat down at the table. We typically have done it in my office because I had a secretary that really knew how to do this. And we'd put all these dollar amounts together, and we'd say, okay, we've got $12 million or whatever it is to spend. And we say, what are the critical needs in San Juan County? And so we put we've got a bad bridge, or we've got a flood control problem. We put the dollars there. We all put it. We don't worry about whether it's in my district or Bill's district or Representative Duncan's or whoever. We say that's where the major need is. And I've put my money in that I'm appropriated in my district. I've put it over Mark Duncan's area. Many times we've done that.
Right. So. And those all to me seem like kind of high dollar projects that you may not be able to afford kind of on your own with the allocation that you are given per se.
Right. If I've got $3 or $4 million, but you have a project that needs $10 million, how do you do it? Well, you have to rely on the other guys to kick in their extra dollars.
Right. And I guess that's why some of these major projects get done, whereas maybe in the other parts of the state, it is maybe a few pieces of playground equipment, which are important, but those are within that maybe legislator's dollar amount that they can
spend. I think the guys, the legislators down in the southeast corner kind of do the same thing because it's a little more complicated. We're a one-county district. I don't have any of anybody else's county in my district, any other county in my district. I'm strictly San Juan County. So it's a little different. If you're down in the southeast corner, you may have some of Eddie and Lee and right. Chavis and all of those may be in your district. So you kind of have to figure out how to balance that. It's a little different, a little tougher, but we all have different districts and different problems all over the state.
Right, but you can work together, I guess, is kind of the idea. And that's the other part of it, too, that I wanted to ask you about is working together. I think that's a big tenet of politics to get things done, especially if you're in the minority party.
Right.
You can't do much without support from the other side of the aisle, but that has seemed to be happening occasionally at the legislature. 20 years of working back and forth, I mean, you've probably got some pretty good negotiating skills.
Well,
compromising skills.
I've managed to pull off a few tricks, I guess, but it's always it's a challenge every year. Most things you do are multi-year if they're significant, if they're large, they're multi-year projects. One that's been in the press lately was the Legacy Fund that I was very involved with. I was the prime sponsor on that, along with Senator Worth, who's a Democrat in Santa Fe. Senator Worth has. His district is as heavily Democrat as mine is heavily Republican. So we've known each other well before we were legislators. I was born and raised in Santa Fe County. I didn't know him back then, but we have some
mutual friends,
that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So we were able to just sit down over coffee and talk and maintain that friendship. I've always had a philosophy. You can either, as a legislator, you can be a politician or a policymaker. And we're all some of both. We have to play the political game all the time. But if you, I tended to drift toward policy, and I let some other guys worry about the fights and the Trumps and those kind of issues, and let the battles happen there. And I tried to deal with, let's get something done that makes sense for the state or for San Juan County or whatever it is.
Right. And so this legacy fund, pardon me, from what we're talking about is. Kind of comes from that extra revenue that we were talking about too, right? And so you have all this money coming in, and the thought was, let's set some of it aside in a fund like this that maybe we can tap on a rainy day, for example, or when that oil and gas price falls or production drops.
Right.
That's kind of the idea?
We thought we were going to have $50 million a year for 3 or 4 years, and we'd get it up to a couple hundred million dollars. We had so much extra change this year, we were able to talk the powers that be into putting a full $300 million. That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
Plus the $50 million we put in last year. So we got $350 million in the Legacy Fund. That's for conservation activities. That was my early career. I came up here working for the USDA with soil and water conservation districts. And that's how I got to San Juan County. I started my own business later and didn't stick with that. But that's always been an interest of mine, is to work with agriculture in particular. But, I'm a hunter and a fisherman, and I like those types of activities, and I like to see that we do the right things for, and then with all the fires and the damage and the issues we've had, conservation funding is going to be very critical in the future. So with those things on the agenda, everybody was willing to talk about it, and in the past, I'd say, well, let's put a couple of million dollars out there, and then the budget wasn't so good, so that couple of million dollars would pretty well go away.
Right.
So we always had it in mind that if we could get an established fund that we could use the interest off of, $350 million will generate annually about $20 million. That's
not
conservative.
Bad. Right.
So you got $20 million that you can spend every year, and it doesn't take long to offset that $350 million at $20 million a year. It's 10, 15 years. You can look at getting the same accomplishments as if you spent that $350 and didn't have anything left at the end of the term.
Right, so this is ongoing.
That's ongoing.
The idea, right? And
right.
So, and I would assume that this means, as you mentioned, conservation, open space, water. There's a lot of other parts of this,
there's,
right?
There's stream banks. There's wildlife. There's forestry. There's soil and water districts, which is agriculture for the most part.
Right.
Rangeland improvement, irrigation systems, all those kind of things. Anything that helps to New Mexico's we're a dry state, so anything we can do to save water, to make things better, mitigate the drought, fire damage, flooding, and they go hand in hand. When you have fire damage, you have flooding. So trying to deal with all of those issues without money is almost impossible.
Sure, right, and this will change that.
This will have to change that.
Right. So. And New Mexico is somewhat unique as a state in that we do have some of these other types of funds, too. The permanent fund certainly comes first to mind as kind of this kind of, again, I keep calling it a savings account, which may not be the correct term, but the idea is to kind of put money away because some of the things that we rely on, as you mentioned, the oil and gas revenue is not going to be here forever.
Right.
And a lot of smarter people than me decided early on to set that aside or some of it aside to... to start building it up?
Yeah, we have two permanent funds. We have the severance tax permanent fund, which is severance taxes off of oil and gas, goes in there, and we use those an amount of that, an earnings off of that. We use that for all this capital work we're talking about. When we build a bridge or do a flood control structure, whatever, those are kind of things that the severance tax permanent fund generates income. Schools, building new schools, that's another biggie out of that. The other one is the land grant permanent fund, and that's the revenues off the state lands of New Mexico. If you ever get a chance to look at the land status map, it tells you what the ownership pattern is of the state of New Mexico. We have huge areas of federal land, of course, and forest and BLM, Indian lands, but we also have little dots of blue land, blue specks. Those are sections that are scattered all over the state, and they're in the oil patch. They're near forest areas, whatever. They generate a lot of income for the state land office. The land commissioner is one that generates or manages those funds that are generated. And those dollars go into the land grant permanent fund. And the land grant permanent fund, that they fund, some of it's designated specifically, like Military Institute gets a chunk of money, and a lot of schools, the School for the Deaf and the School for the Blind, some specialty schools, they get dollars. But all over the state, those some of those dollars are designated, some of them are not, but they all go into the permanent fund that is set up to fund education. And we get, currently we're getting over $1 billion just in revenues that goes into our budget that we count on every year. And that's what those permanent funds. We have the, we're the third largest permanent fund in the nation. Of course, Texas is number one, Alaska's number two, and we're number three.
How about that?
North Dakota hopes to be to beat us out, but they, now that we've surpassed them in oil production, we're the number two producing state in the country. Now that we make more oil than North Dakota does, they're having trouble catching up. So they're gonna, we have a you know what, a almost 100-year legacy on that. So.
Right. Mm-hmm. Not that you're competitive at all.
No.
Not at all. But something to be said. And again, that sets up with $1 billion. That's, if my math is correct, and it's kind of early, that's 1/10 of the state budget.
That's right.
At 10.
It's actually bigger than that now. I don't know exact numbers. Don't bring those with me. But a lot of money.
Right. But that's, I guess, that foretells good things for the future of the state, I guess, to be in this type of position?
The idea of setting all this up was that someday oil and gas goes away, and it will go away, and either politically because of climate change or just physically run out of oil. And either way, we're going to need some source of revenue. If you took the oil out of the mix, it's 50% of our budget revenue right now. So if you took that out of the mix, we'd be hard pressed to come up with enough money to run the state.
To maintain the services.
Just to maintain what we currently do.
Right.
And we consider ourselves a poor state in many ways. So we want to have schools. Well, schools are half of our budget, roughly. It's actually more than half if you include universities. So we have huge demands for dollars, with oil and gas being the primary taxpayer.
Right. Right, and that's an important thing to note. I think I was noticing, and certainly population plays a role in this too, but our neighbors to the north of Colorado, I think they're dealing with a $30 billion budget, just by example, right?
Right.
So it's all relative, but they don't have the funds that we do either.
Right. Yeah, and $30 billion, but they're like a 6 million population. We're a 2 million population.
That's right. So that's what happens. My guest this morning, State Senator Steve Neuville, is here. He has announced his decision not to run for re-election this fall, which is why he maybe looks so calm and relaxed this morning. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But looking forward to retirement. We were talking a little bit before we came on the air this morning about some of the things that you are most looking forward to. It seems spending time with grandkids is up on the list.
Well, grandkids are always important. We've got six of them scattered around. We've got a couple here in town. We've got a couple in Wyoming and a couple in Kansas. So certainly that's going to be on the agenda. My wife's family is from Iowa, so we may spend some time there. So that's not all of it. We've had lots of things we wanted to do, but there's always a committee hearing or something in the way. So we've decided, you know, I've watched many legislators come and go, good friends, and some of our good friends waited a little too long, and I don't want to be there. It's important, I think, to try to do some things that it's been a great experience, and I wouldn't have passed on it for the world, but I've learned a lot, and I've got a lot of knowledge. If anybody wants to call me and sit down and let me impart all that knowledge to you, I can spend an hour on the phone real easily. But it's, I think it's time to let somebody else come in and do some, get some new ideas. The philosophy's changing quite a bit in Santa Fe, so I'm not necessarily out of the loop by any means, but and I could have gone for another who knows how long, but I think it's time.
Right, right. And what? And you mentioned earlier that you are a policy guy, and that's been mm-hmm. kind of one of your thoughts about policy, maybe over politics. And so, right. What do you feel are your biggest policy accomplishments? Or well, when folks think about Steve Neville, what yeah. type of policies do you hope they'll come to mind?
Well, three or four of them that come to mind that you look back through, you can look online and see how many bills I've introduced and passed. If you want to look that up, if you're really bored,
it's a long list.
It's a long list. I've introduced a lot of legislation. Most of it doesn't pass. That's kind of the way it works. Or sometimes it takes 3 or 4 years to get something passed.
Right. But
early on, one of the things that was going on was the pay-to-play scheme that Governor Richardson, who wanted to run for president and needed money, he was pressuring. I don't say that he was illegally doing anything, but he certainly tried to get the people running that permanent fund we were talking about. They were being requested to or encouraged to contribute to his campaign. And so they called it the pay-to-play scheme.
Right.
And we wanted to try to do something to minimize the governor's influence on those funds, just to make sure that we didn't have anything improper or whatever. It was appearing to be, but it may or may not have been. So I was involved in legislation that, first off, it didn't pass. Well, I take that back. It did pass, mm-hmm. went all the way through, and the governor vetoed it. Naturally.
Right.
He didn't want to lose the power. He had control of that committee that managed those funds. Because of all of the appointments on the committee were governor appointments. And so my legislation was to change the structure of that. We came back in a special session not long later, long after that, and we overrode the veto in the Senate. But Ben Lujan was the Speaker of the House at the time in the House, and he refused to hear the legislation to override the veto. So that failed. So we started again a year or two later. I teamed up with a guy who you may have heard of called Tim Keller. And Tim is now the mayor of Albuquerque, but he was a state senator back then. Him and I worked together, and we passed a different bill. And this time, the governor realized that he needed to be on board, so he called me up, and he says, what do we want to do? So we came up with a system where the governor still has appointees on the board, but the legislature also appoints four people. So there's never a time when the governor has total control of that particular committee. We've used that same format for a number of boards and commissions through the years, and it's been pretty effective. It helps to spread the influence, and it's still political, no doubt.
Right. It's, some checks and balances.
Some checks and balances, and there's nobody has any specific loyalty to the governor. He can't replace you. He can't kick you off. So that's always been, the Board of Regents, the governor wants, they can appoint you, but they can't take you off. So that means that the Board of Regents can operate independently when it comes to hiring and firing presidents and those kind of things.
Gotcha. And that's what happens for, they govern UNM, I think, is
right.
What
UNM,
happens.
New Mexico State, all of the universities have a Board of Regents.
Gotcha. Yeah. Gotcha. Very good. Another piece that comes to mind?
Another one more recently was the Public Regulatory Commission, the PRC.
Mm-hmm.
It was a 5-member elected board, very political. They managed the electric and gas utilities and water systems and those kind of things around the state. You can imagine if you're elected, you would want to promise the lowest rates possible. Well, that doesn't mean that PNM or the Water Gas Company of New Mexico or the water systems can survive if you've got the lowest rates. So it's got to be a balance. You've got a private, admittedly, they're monopolies. You've got these companies that they're operating, hoping to make a profit. By law, they're entitled to make a profit. But you have a PRC that was elected and owes their loyalty to the ratepayer, essentially. So it was an awkward system. And so, again, a friend of mine, Peter Wirth, who's the current majority leader in the state Senate, we've been friends for many years. We sat down and thought about it along with a guy named Bill Payne, who's was a state senator in Albuquerque. We came up with a plan to redo the Public Regulatory Commission. It's currently now, it's been totally restructured. There's no elected people. It's appointed, but it's the governor appoints, makes the final appointments, but she makes them from a committee of qualified individuals who have experience in regulating utilities or managing utilities, those kind of things. And that committee selects individuals who are qualified, have advanced degrees, those kind of things. The governor has to choose her appointments from that group. And so it minimized the politics. The most important thing is the governor can't remove them. They can be removed if they're for cause, if they do something crooked, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But they can't be removed just because the governor woke up in a bad mood. So that's the critical difference.
Gotcha. And I think that other system, when they were elected, there was concerns about some of the qualifications, maybe the folks that got onto that commission.
They had no qualification requirements. These guys all
They won an election.
Right. They won an election. That's it.
That's
they
all.
Felt it.
So. And so this changed that.
Yeah.
So quite a bit. Very good. Yes, sir.
One of the more fun ones, if you want to talk about it, that I think we talked about a little before. We started, we've got Glade area where everybody likes to go ride their jeeps and their ATVs.
That's
It kind of dawned on me one day. I was sitting with my ATV in the lawn and on my front yard and saying, I can't get there from here. And I live in foothills. I'm right on the back side.
You're pretty close.
Pretty close.
Yeah.
But legally, I can't get there. I could cheat. I could get down the road and drive down. So there ought to be a way where a local entity can authorize ATVs to get on the roads and go to these recreational areas. Because we have a great one, and we have a lot of people around town that want to get there. So I passed a bill a number of years ago that allowed local entities, the county, the city, and so forth, if they choose to do so, they can allow operation of ATVs and UTVs, the side-by-sides. They can be operated on city streets with certain rules, whatever the city decides to implement. Farmington has done that. Red River's done it. TRC's done it. Most of the counties around the state have done it. This allows outdoor recreation in areas like us. Red River was really a big area for UTVs and ATVs. And so Farmington, you can haul your Polaris up to the hotel down on the south side of town, and then you can drive it out to the Glade if you want to go out and ride.
Right. It's been a big deal for the outdoor recreation.
As far as getting emails and texts and, pats on the back, that's probably one of the best, biggest one I ever had. And it's probably not the most important I ever passed, but it was a lot of fun.
Well, made a big impact, which I think is what good legislation can do
in a
positive way. So, Steve DeVille, we run out of time, I'm sorry to say, but I could talk with you all day and have probably in the past, but maybe we'll have you back towards the end of the year.
That's great.
As we look back on your career even more, but I know you've got more work to do this year. You're not done yet.
Nope.
And we appreciate that as a resident of San Juan County. Thanks for all your years of service, and we'll talk again.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you for coming in this morning. Mm-hmm. That is New Mexico State Senator Steve DeVille, my guest here on KSJE.
Thank you.
Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.